Arthrex has been helping surgeons treat their patients better for more than 40 years. Differentiate your practice by offering the Nano Experience, which combines patient comfort with leading-edge, extremely minimal invasive technology. Arthrex Nano Arthroscopy scopes and instrumentation are ideal for small joint access and visualization across the body. Deeply committed to surgeon support and patient education, Arthrex has also introduced the nanoexperience.com, patient resource illustrating the scientific benefits of nanoarthroscopy, detailing a wide variety of applications, and directing patients to surgeons in their area. Visit nano.arthrex.com to learn more about enhancing your practice and providing optimal patient outcome with this game-changing technology.
You are now listening to Nailed It, the Orthopedic Surgery Podcast, featuring Drs. Jay Fitz and Wendell Cole.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to yet another episode of the Nailed It Ortho Podcast. You are tuned into our BORS/our OITE review series featuring myself and Dr. Spencer Woolwine. And we have finally made it to oncology. Spencer, this is your specialty, so I'm sure I will be doing a lot more listening and learning a lot more from you, but we have finally made it.
We have made it. We're near the end. We'll get all this stuff done and get you on your way to your boards and then off to fellowship.
Yeah. I was talking to one of my future co-fellows today. I just asked him what he's doing and studying for boards. He's like, yeah, I'm listening to you guys. Like, he listens to us like in the morning as far as like, for studying and just learning some like board stuff. And I was telling him, I was like, yeah, you know, we met and we thought we were going to do this in like 3 to 6 months and it's been like 2 years and we're still going at it. Oh, man. But yeah, let's go ahead and hop into some oncology here. And we'll do this in broad waves and kind of just start off with kind of just some overview and talk about some just treatment principles. And so I guess what are some important aspects of, I guess, the history to note when you're just evaluating for the oncology patient, especially when we're trying to look at it and for the test and then for real life as well?
Yeah, so this is something that I really try and get the residents and medical students that I work with a little bit off of the traditional like orthopedic history that we're all kind of made fun of because of like the memes and all that stuff, and kind of get you back into third year of med school and really get to know the patients inside and out. And obviously age, and this is also critical, not just for seeing the patients in clinic, but for the boards, because common things are common for certain ages. And so it's like, it's going to be really unlikely that they're going to test a young patient for metastatic disease, let's say, whereas a 75-year-old in a question stem, more things like metastatic disease should be showing up. Definitely getting the age of the patient, and that can clue you into certain tumors, the types of pain they're having. So if they're having night pain, if they're having pain throughout the day, if they're having pain with weight bearing only, that sort of stuff. Does the pain get better with anti-inflammatories, then we're thinking more like osteoid osteoma type stuff. Or is this completely painless, which is something that is fairly common with soft tissue sarcomas? Is there the presence of a mass? Has there been increase in growth where they say, you know what, I've had this bump here for a year, but over the last 3 months, it's gotten 3 times bigger, let's say. And then family history is important. And then any history of trauma that can kind of clue you into something that maybe can mimic oncology things, but are not oncology things, like a myositis ossificans, where the general practitioner out in the community gets an x-ray and they see this large calcified tumor in the thigh. You get to talking to the patient and it turns out that 15 years ago, they like had a really bad tackle in football, or they fell off a ladder or something and they got this big bruise in their muscle and it turned into myositis ossificans. Just kind of getting to know the patients completely inside and out is critical for oncologic and non-oncologic things. And when you have an x-ray up in clinic, what are some of the questions you should ask yourself when you're evaluating those?
Yeah, so one of the things is going to be, where is the lesion located? So it is in the epiphyseal region? Is it more in the metaphyseal region? Is it in a diaphysis? And then also, is it in, you know, what is the location of it? So in the spine? Is it in the posterior elements or the anterior elements, or these in the flat bones like the skull? So the location is important because different types of tumors, some have classic locations like in the epiphyses, like you think young person, epiphyseolytic lesion, you think like chondroblastoma or something like that. Another thing to think of when you're looking at these x-rays is, what is the tumor doing to the bone? Is there erosion? Is there a lot of lysis? Is the bone cortex expanding like you may see in an aneurysmal bone cyst? And then also, what's the bone doing to the tumor? Some of the things, like if you have a rim of calcium or bone, is more likely to be a slow growing tumor as the bone has had some time to contain it. So when you look at and you see like thick sclerotic margins around a tumor, you're thinking, okay, the bone has walled this off. This is more of a slower growing thing versus something that's more permanent. And we'll talk about that in a bit. One is onion skinning. And so what onion skinning is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, not only with this, throughout the entire section, but onion skinning, what that is the bone is attempting to contain the tumor. So it's making multiple attempts, but the tumor, because it's fast growing, the tumor keeps expanding through and expanding this. This is classically seen in Ewing sarcoma. That's onion skinning. But you can also have lifting of the periosteum and calcification, or what we kind of call that Codman's triangle, which is seen classically in osteosarcoma. And then also, what is the matrix lesion? Like, so is this a lytic lesion? Is it a blastic lesion? Do they have areas in the bone where one area is more lytic and one area is more blastic? So these are all different things that you can just start to think about in your head when you're evaluating x-rays, really for anything, but obviously for oncological patients. And this is kind of just, again, big overview, but what are some common epiphyseal tumors?
Yeah, and so this is where the age comes into factor. So if you have an adult, if you have somebody in their 50s, 60s, or 70s, and the epiphyseal tumors, you're going to think possibly like a clear cell chondrosarcoma, multiple myeloma, lymphoma, or metastases. And then the children, so this is children and adolescents have those distinct regions of the bone because they're like the epiphysis is separated from the metaphysis by the physeal plate. There are some tumors that are going to respect that physeal plate. There are some that are not. And it's kind of key to knowing that usually the benign things are going to respect the physeal plate because they're not aggressive enough to grow through it. Whereas things like osteosarcoma are not, because they're very aggressive type tumors. And while you may see a bunch of x-rays either in residency or your fellowships or whatever that show like, oh, osteosarcoma with primarily metaphyseal, believe me, I've seen plenty that have gone through the physeal plate and not respected that. So that's not a kind of a hard and fast rule. But for children, you're thinking like chondroblastoma, eosinophilic granuloma, giant cell tumors are epiphyseal, but as they become more adolescent and their physeal plate closes, then you might see those giant cell tumors are more metaphyseal plus epiphyseal as well. And that kind of brings us now going into the metaphyseal region. What are some of the common metaphyseal tumors?
Yeah. So again, so in adults, you may think Mets, like you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, to give you a 75-year-old male, I think again, Mets, some metastatic disease, osteosarcoma, which you may see some in some adolescents. Chondrosarcoma is also metaphyseal lesion, giant cell tumor. I know we just mentioned this as being an epiphyseal lesion, but this can be metaphyseal lesion and it can also extend into the epiphyses. So we talked about epiphyseal tumors. We talked about some common metaphyseal tumors. What are some common diaphyseal tumors? And I guess this little mnemonic that I've seen multiple times through my studying.
Yeah, you'll find this stuff in like Miller's, even on ortho bullets. And it's a kind of just the vowels for the diaphyseal tumor. So A, adamantinoma, which is pretty much just a tibial type tumor. It's the kind of malignant tibial tumor. E is for eosinophilic granuloma. I is for infection. And while infection's not technically a tumor, you can get confused. I had a diaphyseal lesion that ended up technically being an osteosarcoma, but it looked like an infection. So there are some places that teach, and I kind of do this too, unless I'm really convinced one way or another, but I culture every biopsy I take and I biopsy every culture, just because infection can mimic malignancy and malignancy can mimic infection. You don't want to miss something purely because you're kind of tunnel vision and you're only looking for infection when you could be missing a true malignancy. Oh, so osteoid osteoma and osteoblastoma, you and all, even though this starts with an E, it sounds like you. So Ewing's is a diaphyseal type tumor. And then Y, think some of the tumors that have a Y in them. So fibrous dysplasia, lymphoma, myeloma, those are going to be more kind of diaphyseal type tumors. And then we get into the age group. So what are some of the common bone tumors in kids based on age?
Yeah. So if we're going from age 0 to 5, you're thinking things like Langerhans cell histiocytosis, metastatic disease, such as like a neuroblastoma or rhabdomyosarcoma, as well as leukemia. When you look at kids age 5 to 10, you're thinking Ewing sarcoma, which you just mentioned was a common diaphyseal tumor. And then when we're looking at more of the adolescent age from 11, 18, this is more kind of the osteosarcoma. And I think they kind of many times give you the classic teenager and then show you osteosarcoma. But you can also have Ewing sarcoma in patients that are aged 11 to 18. And so what are locations within the bone where tumors can occur? So we talked about earlier, like the location as far as metaphyseal, epiphyseal, and diaphyseal. But what are some other ways to kind of further classify this?
Yeah, this goes kind of into how you discuss the lesions to either your attending or to the transfer center or whatever it may be where you're describing these tumors. So like we talked about before, where it's like, oh, is it a lytic lesion, a blastic lesion, expanding the cortex? You see the onion skinning or the Codman's triangle. This can also be a way of describing. So it's like a central lesion, which can be like enchondromas or bone cysts. Is it an eccentric lesion? So it's not quite in the central region of the bone, but it's kind of off-centered, closer to one cortex than it is the other. And that can be things like giant cell tumors, chondrosarcomas, osteosarcomas. Is it a cortical-based tumor? Things that expand the cortex itself. So like a non-ossifying fibroma, osteoid osteoma, an adamantinoma, or a Brody's abscess. And then is it juxtacortical, meaning next to the cortex? So those are going to be like the periosteal osteosarcomas and the periosteal chondrosarcomas. So like you could be describing, let's say, an enchondroma to somebody where it's like we have an AP lateral of a right knee showing a central calcified lesion within the metaphysis of the distal femur. It has a kind of like a cloud-like or popcorn appearance, which is most consistent with an enchondroma. So that's how you would use the central, eccentric, cortical, and juxtacortical classifications. And then like you were talking about with some of the spine tumors, we have anterior and posterior spine tumors. What are some of the common ones there?
Yeah, so when you're looking more of the anterior elements, you know, this is things like the vertebral body. You think a little bit more commonly giant cell tumor, Mets, as well as osteosarcoma. Now, when you look at more of the posterior elements, you're looking, again, posteriorly lamina, the spinous process, things of that sort. These are things going to be a little bit more like aneurysmal bone cysts, where you'll see, again, that you may see some cortical expansion, the osteoid osteomas and osteoblastomas. Those are also sometimes commonly in the posterior elements, as well as osteochondromas. So anterior elements, again, think more giant cell tumor, Mets, osteosarcoma. Posterior elements, think aneurysmal bone cysts, osteoid osteomas, osteoblastomas, as well as osteochondromas. Now, what are some types of appearances of tumors on X-ray as they interact with the bone? So we're like trying to break this down and hopefully get a solid base of knowledge for those listening to this and of how to evaluate these and how to start to think of tumors. So what are some types of appearances of tumors on X-ray as they interact with the bone?
Yeah, so these are going to be things like you'll hear people talk about a geographic bone lesion, a moth-eaten or permeative appearance. And so the geographic bone lesions, think like a giant cell tumor where they have sharp borders. They have a very easily defined beginning and end of the tumor. Same thing can be said for like non-ossifying fibromas, aneurysmal bone cysts, simple bone cysts. So like the unitemporal bone cysts and the proximal humerus or the proximal femur that you'll get tested on in the pediatric sections. Those are geographic lesions. The moth-eaten lesions are less well-defined. You can kind of think of moth-eaten and permeative as similar way of describing the same sort of thing, but moth-eaten is like, I see a lytic part, and then as it goes from the distinctly lytic part of the bone into the normal bone, you have what's called a large zone of transition. Basically, it's hard to exactly tell where the tumor starts and where it ends. So where's the lytic region and then where is normal bone again? That's called a large zone of transition. And the same thing is kind of the permeative, where permeative technically is there's no distinct like lytic part that goes into a large zone of transition. It's just the whole bone itself kind of looks damaged and eroded from a tumor. And you can think of things like a multiple myeloma may have well-defined lesions, but also may have this kind of permeative appearance on x-ray. So don't get bogged down on the true differences between moth-eaten and permeative. Just know that geographic lesions usually are benign. Moth-eaten and permeative are usually more malignant because there's the tumor's just invading the bone and it's sending out its like fingerlings through the bone and chewing away at it at a very fast pace. So there's no way for the bone to remodel around it. And then how do tumors that have a cartilage matrix grow?
Yeah, so these are going to grow in a lobular or a ball-like manner. So you look at the x-rays and you'll see that there's going to be calcification, and these typically occur around the periphery. So you get that classic ring and arcs appearance on x-rays. And I think you mentioned that a little bit earlier when you were talking about the central and chondroma lesion. And so again, so cartilage is going to grow in a lobular or a ball-like manner. You're going to get calcifications around the periphery. So you get those ring and arc appearances on x-rays. And some x-rays that you get where I remember for a while, starting off when I was like an intern and trying to dive into this world of orthopedic oncology, and it was all way above my head. One way that you can at least start to try to tell the difference between dedifferentiation on x-ray and what this is. So you'll have like one area of a certain type of tumor and then it'll like pretty much dedifferentiate. So you'll have something else. So for this, you may see ring and arc calcifications, and then you might just see lytic bone lesion next to that. And then classically what I've seen, if they show the histology slide, it'll show just like that. So in one area, you'll see cartilage, you'll see like a cells that are producing a cartilage matrix, and another one, it's just something completely different. I hope that you all enjoyed our first episode of our oncology review for our OIT review series. If you have not already, go and check out our companion book, please, please do. And it has all the notes literally to everything that we've gone over so far, the hours and hours and hours of details. So go and check that out and hit the subscribe button, leave us a review, and we'll see everybody next time. Offer a revolutionary patient experience and expand your diagnostic and treatment offerings with the Arthrex Nano Experience. Backed by a continuous iterative process that incorporates advancements in technology and surgeon feedback, the nanoscope system and nanoarthroscopy instrumentation are the tools of choice for instant diagnostic imaging and extremely minimally invasive arthroscopy procedures, many of which can be performed in an outpatient or ASC setting with patient-specific anesthesia options. Furthermore, Arthrex provides unparalleled surgeon support and resources, including the nanoexperience.com, a patient education website illustrating the science and benefits of nanoarthroscopy and directing patients to surgeons in their local area. Learn more at nano.arthrex.com.